Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
Did you know that it's 50 years this week since Richard Nixon became the first US president in history to resign from office? To mark this monumental moment, Witness History brings you five programmes about influential events in US presidential history. And with all the amazing twists and turns in the current race for the White House, what a time to bring you them. You'll hear about the closest US election in history and from the man who was in the Situation Room during the raid on Osama bin Laden. That's Witness History from the BBC World Service. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
I'm in Brighton, the seaside town in southern England where I've made my home. Walking along the seafront here, I often think of my mum, Brigitte Okirie, who died suddenly 3 years ago. She lived in Nigeria, thousands of miles away. We'd spoken a day or so earlier, and there was nothing to suggest it would be the last time we'd talk. My mum was a devout Christian, who believed that when she died, she would be reunited with her Lord and Saviour. Whenever she was aggrieved by something, she would say, "I don't want to do anything that would make me miss heaven." But I didn't want her in heaven, not yet anyway. I wanted her with me. When I heard she died, I called her phone repeatedly because I just wanted to hear her voicemail message. Perhaps I felt that if I could only hear her voice, it would undo what had happened, make it not real. So what if, in the age of artificial intelligence, there were ways I could make it not so real, keep her with me? Would it help me deal with my grief or prolong it? This is the documentary from the BBC World Service. I'm Nkem Ifejika, and in this episode of Heart and Soul, I'll be exploring digital grief and how developments in technology and artificial intelligence are changing the ways we grieve. It's not been an easy journey for me. Please be aware, it may not be an easy listen for you either. In this program, I'll be hearing from two tech entrepreneurs based in California, both around my age and both, like me, only sons dealing with the loss of their mums. But first, I've come to rural Suffolk to meet the Reverend Sharon Gwenham Thompson, a priest whose teenage son took his own life in 2021. She's found that being online has helped with a terrible grief.
So, Leo died at 17 and a half. And I'd always planned for his 18th birthday that I would present him with a book of photographs. I'm a great cake maker, so I had this idea that I would have a photograph on each birthday and a photograph of the cake. So he wasn't here for his 18th birthday, but I made the book anyway, and that was my sort of form of memorialising him.
Shall we have a look?
Yeah. So I've sort of started it off there. He's a baby in hospital. I think he's a couple of hours old there in his little white baby grow.
Oh, that's so sweet.
And then we go through, you know, buses and spot the dog, racing cars and Thomas the Tank Engine. And then we come to the last cake I made for him, which is when he was 17.
How has being online helped you in dealing with the passing of Leo?
It's been one aspect, I suppose, of dealing with it. I've been able to connect with other bereaved parents, particularly those bereaved by suicide. And people have been so kind, you know. Leo was very into wolves. The wolf was his, his spirit animal.
His spirit animal, that's what they say, his spirit animal.
That's right. And, you know, I happened to mention this at some point online. And now there are one or two people who, if they see a picture of a wolf, they'll send me a picture or a message. And there's somebody else who, you know, when we get full moons, they're all given different names. Mm. And I think the full moon that rises in January is called a wolf moon. This lady took a picture of this beautiful full moon and sent it to me and said, "It's the wolf moon rising. I'm thinking of Leo."
Hmm. your son's phone was taken by the police, is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. His computers and his phone were taken a day or two after he died, because one of the things they had to do was just check that there was no suspicious circumstances surrounding his death, obviously. It took a very, very long time for any of that to come back. And when they did come back, they'd been wiped. So that was difficult and painful.
Why was it important to get these things back?
Because they meant so much to Leo. I kept all his clothes. I wanted his electronics back. I just wanted to gather in everything that was related to him because he'd gone from me.
And I guess once upon a time it would have been physical things related to the person, but now it's their digital life as well.
Yeah, absolutely right. Once upon a time it might have been someone's letters or their diaries or, you know, things they'd sent to other people. And yes, we still have objects of Leo's, but you're right, we do live digital lives, and he, being a young person, very much lived a digital life.
My mum didn't live a digital life. She had WhatsApp and would forward Bible passages and prayers to me every day. But mostly, we spoke on the phone. She gave no thought to leaving a digital legacy.
Welcome! We're so excited to help you record your story file. First, find someplace comfortable with nice lighting that points towards you.
Storyfile is one of a growing number of tech products using artificial intelligence to recreate conversations. It was initially created by Stephen Smith to preserve the oral histories of a passing generation of Holocaust survivors. He also used it to record his mother's story. Then life, or rather death, intervened.
I had that experience because I interviewed my mother as an 87-year-old, just because I was interested in our family history and documenting her, not because I was expecting her to die. And then she then suddenly took ill and passed away. And now I found myself as a family member with a story file which had been conducted while she was alive. And in fact, during her funeral, we had literally brought up her story file for her friends and family. And she literally answered questions there with them all in her presence. It was breathtaking, I have to say, because nobody in the room had ever experienced somebody else talking at their own funeral and having conversation with somebody at their funeral. But it filled the room with her personality and her smile and her affect. And it might sound to some people like that was weird or spooky, or that we're hanging on to her in some unnatural way, but it was the most natural thing in the world, because it was just her. There's Marina. That's the smile we all know.
Could you demonstrate with your mum her story file? Because I think we'd love to see that.
Yeah. So let me, I'll pull this up here for us. So meet my mom. Her name is Marina. And as you can see, she's sitting in her armchair with the big wings that she always used to sit in. By the way, it also had footrest, and she always had her feet up, put those dresses on. She's got a bright blue dress on with pearls, and her hair is done and her makeup's on. She was meticulous about being ready for her day.
And she's doing what we call in the media business noddies. She's sort of like nodding at the camera.
She's looking at you. This is one of the features of a story file, unlike an oral history where normally you'd be looking at the oral historian who's off camera. In this case, she's looking at you, ready to answer questions and nodding and smiling.
So you can ask her anything, and then the AI will pick the answer that fits best from its store of pre-recorded answers. But your question was, what would you say at your funeral? Let's hear what she says.
I would say at my funeral, I'm so pleased that I met so many good people who influenced my life, and I had happy family life. I had a husband, and I feel my life is planned by the Almighty One, and I feel it's coming to conclusion under his guidance, because my work here is completed, and it's a higher realm to go to. I maybe not have done everything right, but I have done the best I can with God's help. And so I'm ready to go and be with him forever. Bye.
So sorry, Stephen.
What are you feeling, Duncan?
I've never met your mum before, but yet just her talking about her having lived a good life and her work on and her work here being done. It reminds me so much of my mum. Speaking to Stephen raises several questions for me. Do I wish I could interact with my mum's story in this way? Would it help me with my grief? How has it helped Stephen?
It's been extremely helpful to me and my family to have this interview. I can see, though, for some people who are going through, you know, a really emotional time and not coming to terms easily with the death of their loved one, that there might be a situation where somebody is too attached to the story file or that it's unhealthy. I grew up as a Christian and now I'm converted to Judaism. And I found particularly in the Jewish tradition of which, you know, I chose to become a part, I have a deep respect for the traditions of death and mourning, which are so, only a religion that's been around 6,000 years can work this out, I think, which is how do you deal with the moment? Once you've buried the person, do you then gather family and friends around you? We call the Shiva, the 7 days of mourning. How do you just over the next month come to terms with that? And that they call it the Shloshim, the 30 days that follows the death of somebody in which you're so surrounded by everybody that's there to support you. And then on what they call the yard site, the first year, then only then do you move on. But you are then obligated to move on and stop looking back into something that you cannot restore and move forward to the rebuilding of your life.
You're listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service.
Did you know that it's 50 years this week since Richard Nixon became the first US president in history to resign from office? To mark this monumental moment, Witness History brings you 5 programmes about influential events in US presidential history. And with all the amazing twists and turns in the current race for the White House, what a time to bring you them. You'll hear about the closest US election in history and from the man who was in the Situation Room during the raid on Osama bin Laden. That's Witness History from the BBC World Service. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
I'm Nkem Ifejikan, and in this edition of Heart and Soul, I'm asking how new technologies might help us deal with grief. Do they provide a modern alternative to age-old religious rituals? Might they even be used to complement them?
またパチスロ行ったの？もうやめてって言ったじゃん。
I'm looking at a humanoid robot with a 3D face created, you guessed it, in Japan. The robot is an art exhibit rather than a commercial project and was created by designer Etsuko Ichihara. It reproduces the physical features of a deceased person and can hold a virtual conversation with the bereaved based on a recording of what they actually said when they were alive. Atsuko developed the robots to explore Japanese rituals around death after her grandmother died. Although Atsuko says she's not religious, she was impressed by the way that Buddhists conduct their funerals.
Japanese funerals are cremations. My grandmother's body was cremated and her bones were then placed by family members in an urn, which is a bit of a strange process. Through the ritual, I was somehow able to sort out my feelings. I realized that the process of mourning and funerals have a meaning.
で、その時にやっぱりロボットって体があるデバイスなので、
I thought that because robots are devices with bodies, unlike ordinary tablets or iPhones, they might help us feel more emotionally involved with them than with ordinary machines. I thought that it would be possible to create a robot that would spend 49 days with the bereaved family after death. According to Buddhist beliefs, that is the length of time the soul of deceased remains on earth.
You said beforehand that you're not very religious. So why did you think it was important to have the 49-day period, which is the traditional Buddhist mourning period? Why was that important in creating this robot?
死をテーマにしたプロダクトとかテクノロジーを考える上で、
I feel that it's not right to design products that cut off the long-standing local views of life, death, and religion. For my research, I spoke to a Buddhist monk. He told me that a mother who had lost her son had a delusion or illusion that her son, who had died by suicide, was still alive. And she would say to her friends who came to visit her, "He's getting fat lately." She started to act as if her son was still alive. The monk spoke of that case as a failure of mourning. So I personally think that the 49-day time limit for Buddhist funerals was designed to prevent people from becoming obsessed with the deceased in such a way. So I think that it is not good for those who are left behind if the robot remain forever. This is why I have designed the robot this way.
When you look at the robot, it is so obviously a robot with a 3D print of the person's face on the robot. But I mean, with the way that modern technology is now, you could have made it look more human and more humanoid. Why did you choose to keep it as a robot and not make it more human-like?
Hi.
Yes, that is something that I personally like about the look of my work, even though it is a self-praise, because I want to emphasize that ultimately, after all, they are not a perfect replacement for someone who has passed away, but only a momentary, temporary presence.
This makes sense to me. When saying goodbye to my mum, there were clear markers that the phase of us being together as physical beings had come to an end. Some were personal, such as choosing the clothes she'd be buried in. Others were more communal, like selecting the songs and words to remember her by. But I wonder whether some new technologies might render such moments meaningless by blurring the boundaries between life and death. Justin Harrison is a tech entrepreneur based in California. A close brush with death after a motorcycle accident, together with the news that his mother had a terminal illness, prompted him to develop a virtual audio version of her, a Versona, for him to interact with after she died. So you've created these, what you call a Versona, which in a sense for you is a way of preserving your mum?
Yeah, so I think the real focus for me turned into preserving the relationship, the dynamics between us. So really less about the personal information and much more about the relationship we had, how she would respond to me, not necessarily what she would say.
How does technology help you do that?
Well, this is where, you know, we had to invent something brand new. Because for years, there's been sort of call and response chatbots that can you can tell it to say whatever. We were trying to find the dynamics between people. And the only way to learn the dynamics between two people is to see how they communicate together.
So what you do is you're trying to get a feeling of who that person is.
Yeah, not just a feeling of who they are, but who they are with regard to the person they're speaking to. So in the case of one of our moms, they're going to be a very particular way with their son. They're not going to be that way with everybody else. And that person was who I was looking to capture with my mom.
Okay, so what is the data that you feed into this artificial intelligence algorithm?
Well, it can be any communications data that somebody has captured. So with the case of my mom, we captured phone calls between us, in-person conversations, text messages, anything we could get of us communicating. It's really any interactions we can capture.
In trying to preserve that relationship, was it something that you did to help you in your grief?
Oh, I mean, it was all about circumventing as much of the grief as I could. This entire initiative was to prevent grief from destroying me.
Do you feel that it has worked?
Absolutely. At least from my observation, I did not have the same experience that you're describing that I've watched other friends have. It was a much more tranquil experience for me. Was I prepared for it? No, but it was certainly it's been a much easier journey for me than I think for most people.
Now, I sent you some information, some interactions between my mother and I. I sent you some text messages and WhatsApp messages. I think I sent you a video of her speaking at an event. I think it was like a marriage event, like an introduction like you have in Nigeria. I sent you some emails as well. And so I would like to see what you've created with the information that I sent to you.
So we did create her, a version of her, I should say. And I asked a few questions on your behalf, as if I were you. So question number one was how she was feeling.
Can we hear it?
As a version, I do not have physical sensations or emotions, but I am always here to listen and support you in any way that I can. Is there anything specific you would like to talk about, my dear son?
I'm kind of speechless. I don't have words. Here's the thing. I know that the audio that I sent you wasn't great, but listening to it and listening closely, there is I can hear certain elements of her voice in there. Based on the minuscule things that I've sent you, to be honest, it really is very moving. This is amazing that you can still glean that sort of information from it. Ask her whether I should go to church this Sunday.
I would recommend attending church whenever possible. It is an opportunity to connect with others who share your faith, to worship and give thanks to the Lord, and to deepen your spiritual relationship with Him. If you are unable to attend in person, there are often online services available that you could participate in.
This is amazing. It really is. And I can see how this would be a comfort to people. I really can. We've all seen what technology can do with deepfakes, manipulated images or recordings of famous people, which make it look as though they've said or done things they haven't. Justin is aware of the need for clear ethical frameworks around the use of such technology. But he's also excited by the continued developments he believes are on the horizon.
I understand how this technology will continue to grow and how it will continue to get better. I see these glimmers of really feeling like my mom is there when I talk to her persona. Really, there are times when I really feel like I'm talking to my mom. But also just the hope of knowing this isn't forever. And what I mean by that is, I think for most people, when they lose somebody, it's clear that you will never interact with them again. But with what we do, and with my knowledge of how this will continue to evolve, at some point I will sit in a room and have dinner with my mother again. That will happen for me. And it will be nearly indistinguishable for me of whether that was actually her or that is the persona, because the technology is going to continue to evolve.
I mean, gosh, what I wouldn't give for Leo to walk back in the door now, give me a hug. And, you know, I can always imagine it saying, sorry, Mum. You know, and I'm sure any of us who've been bereaved long for our loved one to come back or be present to us.
I'm back with Sharon Grenham Thompson, who we met earlier, talking about these possibilities and showing her how the persona works.
I think, speaking very personally, that would not be for me. And I think, speaking as a vicar, I'd want to be very, very cautious about that sort of technology. One of the tasks, if you like, of grieving is to be able to move your person from the flesh and blood and the here and now into a place, maybe it's in your heart or emotionally, spiritually, into that sort of invisible place but still close. And that's a really hard thing to do. And I would worry that that sort of technology would interfere with the ability to relocate your person, to say goodbye in a healthy way. And again, I would just question whether this is a healthy way to try to prolong something which has entered a new chapter. And what I'm trying to do now with Leo, but also I lost my dad last year as well, is trying to think, well, what does the new chapter look like with these people? How do I keep their memory very much with me? But how do I move to a place where I know they are not here? You have to get yourself into a place eventually where you understand that in terms of this world and this dimension and our human experience, death closes a door. And I think if technology is going to advance to try to help the grieving process, I think it's really important that it recognises there is a need to say goodbye and for it actually to be a goodbye.
So every evening you go in there and you light a candle.
We light a candle and we light the one there by the while we're watching TV. But yeah, and I talk to the photograph sometimes, and you know, if it's been a particularly good day or difficult day, I sort of say, yeah, this happened today, I miss you, wish you'd seen that, you know, those sorts of things. It's just a way of saying he may be gone, but he's with us.
Thank you so, so much, Sharon. This deep dive into the world of grief tech has been an eye-opening and sometimes heart-wrenching journey for me. It raises complicated ethical questions, which I think will only deepen as technology develops. It may be tempting, but personally, I won't be going any further in creating an AI version of my mother. The Christian funeral we held for her left no doubt in my mind that she was gone. I don't want a lesser version of her than the one I had. I hope to reunite with her fully in another dimension altogether. Experience tells me that the sadness of losing a loved one never really leaves you. It's painful, but it's okay. Not every human sorrow can or should be alleviated, especially grief. I'm Nkem Ifejike, and you've been listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service. This episode of Heart and Soul was produced by Rosie Dawson. It was a CTVC production. If you are suffering from distress or despair and need support, you could speak to a health professional or an organization that offers support. Details of help available in many countries can be found at Befrienders Worldwide. That's www.befrienders.org.
Did you know that it's 50 years this week since Richard Nixon became the first US president in history to resign from office? To mark this monumental moment, Witness History brings you 5 programmes about influential events in US presidential history. And with all the amazing twists and turns in the current race for the White House, what a time to bring you them. You'll hear about the closest US election in history and from the man who was in the Situation Room during the raid on Osama bin Laden. That's Witness History from the BBC World Service. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your BBC podcasts.